Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, July 25th, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, the Doha round has failed. We'll report what the collapse potentially means for Farm Bill 2007 and U.S. trade negotiations. Also, Japanese beef processors are already saying no thanks if and when beef trade with the U.S. resumes. And a report about corn rootworm. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, crop progress reports from Illinois and Minnesota, a report on strategies to open China to U.S. corn, and agricultural weather. It's the Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this. September wheat in Kansas City, 489 and a half, down 9 3/4. December, 505, down 10 3/4. At the Chicago Board of Trade, September wheat, 393 1/4, down 7 1/4. December, 413 and a half, down 7 1/4. September corn, 239 and a half, down up a half. December, 256, up 3/4. March, 269 3/4, up a half. And the December 2007, 303 unchanged. August soybeans, 585 1/4, up 2. September, 593 1/4, up 2 1/2. November 2006, 607, up 2 1/4. November 2007, 657, up 1 1/2. August soybean meal, 168.90, up a dollar. August soybean oil, 26.28, down 2. At the Merck, August feeders, 113.37 1/2, up 2 1/2. August live cattle, 82.50, down 17 1/2. And then July pork bellies, 91 even, down 125. Joining us on the phone to talk about the markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
After a fairly promising opening bell at the Chicago Board of Trade this morning, prices spent the day just sort of drifting lower and practically ended up where we started the day.
You know, we started with a lot of enthusiasm over the crop rating being down a little more than expected, down 3% in both the corn and the beans. Seen some deterioration in Iowa, hearing stories of dry land corn being mowed down in Nebraska. You know, all these things in the weather forecast may be looking a little less friendly for out in our western friends out in Iowa and North Dakota and South Dakota, Nebraska, and that way. And just a little bit, like you said, we opened well, we traded well, we traded actively for the first half hour, and things sat still. And when things sit still, they lose momentum. They generally fall rather than go up, Dave, and that's what happened to us today.
Looks to me like it was more a factor of a loss of buying momentum than it was any sort of selling pressure.
That, you know, that's what we said. Things sat still. They didn't follow through to the top side. We seemed to run into some resistance around the, you know, the 260 level on the D's corn and the 613 level on the no beans. And, you know, it just didn't want to follow through. We just want to sort of wait and look and see that the next little forecast like that. The noon forecast, of course, very similar to this morning's run, but the American model did pull it just a little farther south, and if we can get some little more rain across that more central Iowa area and the Iowa-Minnesota border and along that way, why, that would, of course, be a little bit positive to production that way. We've heard some production figures out there, some early estimates, near a 10.8 corn crop and a 303 bean crop, you know, the private estimate out there. So they're saying that the good corn in Illinois and Indiana and Ohio and that might outweigh, we're seeing some deterioration in the Iowa area, Dave, and that's just sort of the thought out there. And we remember back just a year ago, we didn't think northern Illinois would produce anywhere near what it did end up producing, and we're having trouble, you know, getting a good weather rally out of some of this and some of the scares with the new hybrids we have.
We thought that there would not be fill, and indeed there was.
There there was more than we expected. We were very surprised at Northern Illinois' yields last year.
10-8 crop, does that suggest that we might have some pretty good carry in the market come next March?
I would say yes, we probably will, because we're going to need to, at that still continue to want to buy acres for the next year because of the ethanol, the fuel idea of the corn is also a fuel instead of just feed now and food. So, there's a good chance we can see some carry continue to develop as long as we stay down under that 11 million bushel corn crop.
Let's look at some particulars. Begin with the November soybeans today, Wayne. We did inch up over the 100-day moving average this morning, which was at 613, as you previously mentioned. Why weren't there any buy stops up there?
Well, that's a question I don't have the answer to, Dave. You would have thought there possibly could have been, but I think that, the people that would have been running those and our funds and different people along the way got a little bit of a cautious attitude right now. They're just wanting to wait and see what is happening here along the way. I think, our carryout is big in the beans. We haven't seen a lot of our demand, is shifted to South America mainly at this point in time. So it's awfully hard to get a rally going just after the mentality that we left and beat up some of the bulls last week really pretty good.
Does the fact that the market finished soft negate the possibility that we had that one-day V-bottom off of Friday?
It sure doesn't help anything, Dave, that's for sure, because today closing down the bottom half of the trading range just does not give you a feeling of overconfidence going into the evening trade or tomorrow's trade at all that way. We're going to probably have to see some sort of weather confirmation that dryness or heat coming in and showing up a little more than what we saw in today's run.
Turn your attention to Dee's corn. As I look at the charts and think about it, I'm kind of wondering if we saw the high for the week.
It is possible, Dave. I mean, we won't say, we don't know for sure on a lot of feelings here that way, but we do seem to feel that the 250 is somewhat of a base here now, and it unfortunately looks like 260 seems to be the top, so we're maybe just in a dime trading range here, and until we see some good reasoning to break out either way, well, we could sit here and trade sideways through the week.
And how long might that sideways pattern remain until we get more verification, maybe all the way to the crop tour?
Maybe all the way to the crop tour. Basically it's going to depend a lot on every day we get along that we do get enough moisture to sustain the crop and keep it moving forward and filling. Then we get more of a chance, sort of like we talked today, we run out of buying. People aren't quite as anxious to buy at those levels. So, along the way, I think we've got enough fear to not go too low, but we also have enough fear that the rain's going to come through that we aren't going to go too high.
Give us your wheat analysis for the day.
The wheat, very surprising in the many respects, but it looks as we approach 80% done or better in the hard red wheat area on the wheat harvest, towards end of harvest, trying to stick the last little bit away. A lot of times we see a little sell-off here. Technically, we started seeing some sell-off just because of the levels we were at and the way the corn market wasn't reacting any better in the Minneapolis market also. So, and we did see fund liquidation in Chicago also along the way. And in a thin market, it doesn't take a lot. And today was a very quiet, thin trade in all the markets basically across after the first half hour this morning. So the lack of buying and some selling coming in there, just basically the market, fell down and fell down hard.
Thanks much, Wayne.
Thank you, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will be joining us for a look at agricultural weather, taking a look at AM 580's Mike Sola's forecasts for Illinois and Indiana tonight. Northern Illinois and far northern Indiana will receive some scattered showers and thunderstorms. The rest of Illinois and Indiana will see clouds build ahead of a weak frontal system. Lows from 65 to 73. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms will become more numerous throughout the day, pushing to the southeast. Field work will be confined to the far south and in eastern Indiana. Highs from 83 to 93. The supplement for agriculture winds tomorrow beginning to increase, especially in the north tonight, and will generally surpass 10 miles per hour by tomorrow afternoon. The lowest relative humidity will be in the 60 to 70% range tomorrow. In agricultural news, European Union Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson says the U.S. is to blame for the collapse of the Doha round of talks in Geneva. Mandelson issued a 2,500-word statement where he accused the U.S. of accepting or even acknowledging flexibility of EU negotiators over the weekend. But a WTO source that was at the meeting of the G6 trade commissioners says Mandelson was the only official to blame the U.S. Bob Bowman is chairman of the National Corn Growers Association Joint Trade Action Team. Bowman says the failure of the Doha round came down to other nations not making meaningful concessions.
The old adage that a no agreement is better than a poor agreement, and I think the other countries that were unwilling to make meaningful concessions, that's basically what determined why we're where we're at.
Negotiators agreed to indefinitely suspend talks. The Bush administration has given up hope of presenting a Doha agreement to Congress before next July, when the president's special fast-track authority expires. U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab.
Only by completing the Doha round negotiations by the end of 2006 would the agreement be ready in time for us to use trade promotion authority before it expires on July 1, 2007. So at this stage of the game, we do not expect to be able to use the current TPA authority to enact a Doha round agreement if and when one comes together.
The failure of the Doha round also increases the likelihood that the 2002 Farm Bill may be extended by a year or more. More than two dozen U.S. lawmakers are proposing a one-year delay. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says that would be a mistake.
We heard so much in the Farm Bill forums that I did about the need for reform in subsidies that I really believe that we should proceed forward with a Farm Bill. It is very important that we do so.
And Johanns adds he's convinced Farm Bill 2007 will not look anything like the 2002 Farm Bill.
I believe we're headed toward writing the Farm Bill in 2007. I believe a lot of good work is being done by the House and the Senate. We're certainly going to have our ideas. Our commodity group's been very engaged, and so it seems to me that we should avail ourselves of the opportunity to look at farm policy, and the opportunity will be before us next year.
And regarding trade deals, American Farm Bureau trade specialist Dave Salmonson says look for the U.S. to continue with its bilateral strategy.
I think the focus now, as far as moving on negotiations, will certainly be focused on the free trade agreement negotiations with South Korea and all the other countries we're working on.
A WTO report released Monday says worldwide, governments spent more than $300 billion on farm subsidies in 2005. The vast majority of that total comes from 21 developed nations. Senate consideration of FY 2007 appropriations bills, including the ag budget, now appear on hold until after the November elections. Members running for re-election are saying that the provisions of annual appropriations are too politically controversial to be considered before the November elections. The Senate has only approved one spending bill thus far, Homeland Security. If and when Japan finally reopens its border to U.S. beef, a number of major Japanese meat processors say they will not use U.S. beef in hamburger patties, roast beef, or other items they produce. The Japanese processors, including Nippon Meat Packers, supply meat to distributors and restaurants. They worry about U.S. supply and quality and add even when they finally begin processing U.S. beef that they will need to modify their production lines to isolate the product. Meanwhile, reports out of Japan say Japanese inspectors who toured 35 U.S. beef processing plants earlier this month found compliance problems at one or two facilities. An agronomist at Pioneer says control of corn rootworm has become more challenging in recent years. Mert McLeod says the eastern variant of the western corn rootworm is causing big problems, especially in Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Michigan, and Ohio.
Instead of laying its eggs in corn, which is typical of what we know about corn rootworm biology, a fairly significant part of the population now lays its eggs in soybean fields. And so the result of that is, in our standard corn-soybean rotation, we are having very, very significant corn rootworm damage in corn that follows soybean in the cropping cycle. So we have first-year damage. But that particular variant population continues to move geographically, really in almost all directions, to the east and to the north and to the west. And so that's a whole new twist in the corn rootworm management game.
McLeod says the corn rootworm has become the biggest insect pest in the Corn Belt. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
USDA says 59% of the corn crop is rated good to excellent. That's 3 percentage points lower than a week ago, but 6 percentage points better than last year. 78% of the corn crop is silking, 13% is in dough stage. Soybeans were rated 54% good to excellent. That's 3 percentage points lower than last week, and even with last year's conditions. 76% of the crop is blooming, and 32% is setting pods. This week, we have crop progress reports from Illinois and Minnesota.
This is Brad Schwab with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending July 23rd. Temperatures and rainfall were slightly above normal across the state last week. Overall, these were good growing conditions for corn and soybeans. However, some of the storms were accompanied with heavy rains, wind, and hail, causing damage to a few corn and soybean fields. Crops responded well to the moist conditions, as did topsoil moisture supplies, which improved statewide. Most cornfields are now past the threat of silk clipping. However, some later planted fields are still requiring insecticide spraying for beetle infestations. Topsoil moisture supplies finished the week at 13% very short, 24% short, 62% adequate, and 1% surplus. This was an improvement of 11 percentage points in the adequate to surplus category compared to a week ago. Taking a look at the crop progress numbers for the week, corn silking advanced to 96% compared to 93% 1 year ago and 83% for the 5-year average. Corn in the dough stage was reported at 25% ahead of the 20% 1 year ago and 21% normally. Overall, corn condition showed some improvement and was rated 2% very poor, 5% poor, 24% fair, 49% good, and 20% excellent. Soybeans in the bloom stage were reported at 79% compared to 90% 1 year ago and 74% for the 5-year average. 23% of the soybean fields were setting pods compared to 39% 1 year ago and 28% normally. Overall, soybean condition declined somewhat and was rated 2% very poor, 7% poor, 27% fair, 49% good, and 15% excellent. The third cutting of alfalfa has reached 23% complete compared to last year's 24% and the 5-year average of 17%. Pastures across the state were rated in fair to mostly good condition. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Doug Hartwick, Director of USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, reporting the crop weather summary for the week ending July 23, 2006. statewide topsoil moisture supplies as of Friday were rated 38% very short, 37% short, 25% adequate, and none surplus. As of Sunday, July 23rd, corn soaking was estimated at 85%, 30 percentage points ahead of average. 54% of the corn crop was rated in good to excellent condition. Soybeans blooming were estimated at 88% compared to 70% for the average. 29% of the soybean crop were setting pods compared to 14% for the average. Spring wheat had 80% of the crop turning ripe, 39 percentage points ahead of average. Spring wheat condition remained unchanged from the previous week, with 46% of the crop rated in good to excellent condition. That's the weekly crop weather for the week ending July 23, 2006. I'm Doug Hartwig with USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Americans have been trying to open China since the Nixon administration. One-fifth of the world's population lives in that one nation, and as Todd Gleason reports, half of the world's hogs. The trick for America will be to get the hogs to eat U.S. commodities.
There are 6.5 billion people in the world. 1.3 billion live in China, and they're getting wealthier. As the Chinese make more money, they're developing a richer taste for food, for red meat, pork in particular. Half of the world's hogs live in China. U.S. farmers would like those 500 million porcines, that's right, half a billion hogs, to eat American corn and soybeans. That's why University of Illinois professionals have been journeying to the Asian nation since 1989. They say things have changed a lot in China since then on the pork front, and there are many signs U.S. commodities are making headway into the confinement systems, convincing landowners, Chinese farmers, to use corn and soybeans as the basic feedstuff for pigs might be the easy part of the equation. U of I Ag engineer Ted Funk says while the Chinese are eating more pork, they're still a bit traditional.
The big message that we get over there with regard to pork quality is that they like the taste of the backyard pork. They don't feel that this commercial grown pork has the same flavor, the same taste quality as their more traditional genetics. So that's something that we really have to work on.
Remember, 80% of the hogs raised in China are housed in the backyard. These pigs are not likely to be fed corn and soybeans, and they are really likely to be fat, not like the leaner pigs grown in confinement systems. It's one of the many roadblocks on the way to getting U.S. commodities more deeply entrenched in the Chinese diet. Who'd have thought the fat on the back of a hog would be a roadblock? It's not the only one.
And how it's used, too. Pork is usually used in very small portions in those kinds of diets, and it's chopped up fine. There's a lot of fat with it, and you don't go out and buy a pork chop. You buy you get served a dish that has a lot of small pieces of pork and a lot of fat on them, and other body parts too. You can get all kinds of get quite a variety of what we would consider not the prime cuts of the.
That's Ted Funk. He just returned from China. Ted and a group of U of I specialists visit China each year to teach pork production. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The Danville Commercial News reports that officials have located the pickup truck owned by Ryan Catcher in a pond at Kickapoo State Park. The park is located near Catcher's hometown of Oakwood, where the 19-year-old University of Illinois student was last seen in November of 2000. According to the Commercial News, Vermilion County Sheriff's investigators have divers at the site this afternoon to investigate. Broadcast reports say that a teenager is being questioned in shootings along two Indiana interstates that left one man dead. The teenager was being questioned in Delaware County, near where two of the four shootings occurred. Indiana State Police couldn't immediately confirm the reports. Tuscola and Mattoon are still in the running for the FutureGen power plant project. The Energy Consortium chose the two central Illinois towns, plus two sites in Texas, as finalists in the project to build a prototype low-pollution power plant. A final decision on a site is expected next year. The FutureGen project could bring 1,000 construction jobs, about 150 permanent jobs, and millions of dollars to central Illinois. Negotiations resumed this afternoon between the University of Illinois and the Union for Non-Clerical Workers at the Urbana-Champaign campus. Nearly 400 members of AFSCME Local 698 have been working without a contract for nearly a year. The union called in a federal mediator for today's meeting. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich tells Chicago's WLS-TV that he's not worried about his former chief of staff's conduct in hiring people for state jobs or a federal investigation into his administration's employment practices. Blagojevich later ducked reporters' questions about why his then-top aide, Lon Monk, was still seeing the names of job candidates for positions supposed to be free of political consideration late in 2004. Schaumburg-based Motorola will introduce two new additions to its Razr phone family later this year. The Crazer is slightly narrower than the Razr and has a music player and a 2-megapixel camera. The Riser is what's known as a slider phone. Its cover slides open to reveal a keyboard. Motorola debuted the new phones at its annual analysts' meeting. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Joining us now with a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
Any differences in the noon run, tweaking-wise, of the forecast for the 2 weeks?
Not really. The European computer model's a little bit favored over the American models right now in terms of the general pattern across North America, which is not much of any real big change. We do have some better chances for some Midwest rain coming in Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Today there will be some showers and thunderstorms into portions of central and northern and northwestern Iowa and Wisconsin and Minnesota. But overall, we're still looking at a weather pattern that's going to be just a touch above normal temperature-wise and still a little bit below normal when it comes to rainfall in many areas of the Corn Belt, especially still those northern and western areas.
Yeah, I was going to say I didn't hear you mention any western states. Are they going to be drought-stressed and unlikely to see rain during the two-week period?
Well, I think next week we will start to see moisture increasing in those western areas. That will help things out. We might even see a little bit of that late this week, but it's going to be a good 5 to 7 days before the heat and the severe dryness in some of those western areas breaks.
What about down in the Delta? Aren't they getting a tropical disturbance?
They are. In fact, there will be some big, big rains across eastern and southeast Texas, and that will move into the Delta and probably is a pattern that is going to keep it moist down there into the next 5 to 10 days. In fact, precipitation, if you look at any place in the United States that's going to have above normal rainfall, it'll be in those southern and southeast and Delta areas.
Well, what about net drying perhaps in Georgia, though?
Well, they're going to have a little bit early, but there's going to be more precipitation coming down the road, especially early next week.
What are you saying out in the Canadian prairies and wheat-growing areas?
A lot like the Northern Plains, hot and dry. It's good. The extension of the warm and dry weather that we're having across the Dakotas, the Eastern Plains of Montana, Nebraska, that is extending northward, and that is going to continue to be a concern there for a little bit longer. The pattern seems to be set for the summer. What we've got for the rest of the summer, we're just going to see the cycle kind of continuing here where the areas are warm and dry will stay that way. Areas that are a little bit cooler and more moist will stay that way as well. That's the way things appear to be shaping up.
Turn our attention to China, where they're in line for a tropical storm, but it's based on my understanding of where the crops are. It doesn't appear like they're in line to have that storm hit the crops.
Not a lot of the rain will hit the crops. You're right. The better rain will be right along the coast and in the far southern and southeastern areas, while the main growing areas further to the north, northeast, and northwest, there's a little bit of precipitation that will get up from the tropical storm, but just on the southern fringes of the growing areas. Now, China is going to have temperatures near normal not excessively hot. So that will help things out a little bit there, but the dry areas in central and northern China will continue.
Thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And Don joins us every Tuesday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.